So here's to the sojourner searching for shore, who set out to sea on a journey far more.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Sojourner Stories. This is a podcast series that I am creating and streaming live as I create it from my Facebook page. The goal of Sojourner Stories is to share stories and insight from some of the people in my upcoming book who have helped me navigate a crisis of faith. This is all kind of unfiltered. We're just kind of getting the raw stories from people, where they're at, what brought them to any sort of like doubt, questions, disillusionment, faith crisis, and what brought them through this. And I'm so excited that we have Yanela here from literally the other side of the world. Although I did look it up on a map that the other side of the world is actually in the ocean somewhere. But South Africa is very close. I am going to not try to pronounce your last name because you instructed me not to, because I am going to say it wrong. So would you mind pronouncing your last name for us?
Ntlwana. So it's Yanela Ntlwana.
Excellent. I'm just going to read the description that you sent me. Yanela is a learning designer in Cape Town, South Africa, currently pursuing a history master's which looks at decolonization and how universities in South Africa have taught African history. Before academia, she wanted to be a missionary until, in her words, I realized that missionaries were not black. Above all else, she is a mom and a juice bringer to her daughter, Sarah. And also a big fan of Toni Morrison, from what I recall. So I guess let's devote the first, you know, maybe 20 minutes or so of the podcast. I'm anticipating maybe we'll go an hour or so. Just talking about your story and how you grew up in terms of your faith, and then obviously how we intersected in 2011, and then where they brought you afterwards. So I'll just let you go and ask, I guess, questions as we go along.
Okay. Thank you, Nathan. So yeah, I grew up in a Christian household, and my mother loved God. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't want to say I normally say my mother was very religious. My family was very, very religious, but because the word religious now has like so many connotations.
Yes.
Yeah, I just prefer to say like, yeah, that they really believed in God, and they were very invested in their faith, and I learned from them, and I was inspired by them, and I also like became a Christian, and mm-hmm. I was also incredibly invested in my Christianity, mm-hmm. and from a very young age. And I remember like I went to like boarding school like when I was like 10, and I would like, it was also like a missionary type lady there who would come on the Fridays and like preach to us and stuff. And yeah, and I hosted like a Bible study. And then in high school, I remember like I had this like big like gathering of people, and yeah, very invested in mm-hmm. my faith, and very invested in the project of also getting other people into this faith, and
yeah,
love Jesus. And
were you in Margate growing up or?
No, so I was born in Mthatha, which is in the Eastern Cape, and then I moved I went to boarding school in Port Shepstone, and then which is like close to Margate, and then I lived in Margate.
Gotcha.
And then, yeah, so then when I was like, it started like in primary school, I was reading a lot of books, like a lot of like missionary type books, and this one. This is where the missionary thing came from, actually. This the lady who would come on the Fridays, her name was Auntie Jill. We called her Auntie Jill. She'd always tell us these like missionary stories about all of these missionaries out in the world doing missionary work. And I was like, oh my God.
Yeah.
That is what I want to do.
Uh-huh.
And then I would spend my time reading all these Christian books and about all these missionaries. And I was like, I was 12. I was like, this is what I want to do. This is all I want to do. Uh-huh. You know? Uh-huh. And then yeah, so then we went to Margate, and then I was part of my mother's church, and I actually went to a missionary trip to Botswana, which I really loved because I thought the people in Botswana, I was 14 at the time, like, uh-huh. were really amazing and wonderful.
Uh-huh.
But I was still in my mother's church then. And then um, used to go to, well, my mom's church was like a predominantly, it was a black church. I'm not even going to say predominantly black. It was a black church.
Right, right.
And we sang. My mom was a translator, and so they preached in English, and then my mom would translate into Xhosa mm-hmm. or Zulu. Mm-hmm. And then we sang like a few English songs, but we also sang like Xhosa / Zulu songs. This mm-hmm. is like my background. Mm-hmm. And then when I went mm-hmm. to Margate, and also like when I was in boarding school, I was also like part of this, like this missionary lady was a white lady, and our uh-huh. school was like a Model C school. So like, I guess like multiracial, interracial, whatever.
Uh-huh.
And then when I visited, but anyway, it was like a white church. And of course they're like, we're listening to like Hillsong or Bethel or whatever. And mm-hmm. I think I'm trying to see where I was introduced to this, to that world. Can't remember. Anyway, so around, and I'm guessing like 14, 15, like mm-hmm. I'm all of a sudden, like there's a youth group that we're going to, and they're playing all this music
yep.
and they're preaching all this stuff. Mm-hmm. So then I'm like, wow, this is incredible. This is the only thing I ever need. Like, and then I like, around that time, I feel like, cause this is like 14, 15,
uh-huh.
then it's like healing and like everybody's heal. You can every, like, this is when everybody can heal. Healing is for today kind sure. of stuff from Bethel out. And yep. I was like, they're right.
Uh-huh, uh-huh,
uh-huh, uh-huh. Healing is for today. Whereas I feel like in my mother's church, it was like certain people could heal and certain anointed people uh-huh. could heal, blah, 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 blah. But all of a sudden everybody, so I'm trying to like summarize the story real quick to where we lived. And
then, you're doing great.
I think I'll slow down once we get to like our intersection. Then I leave my mother's church.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, they're doing everything wrong.
Yeah.
Because obviously healing's for today. It's not just for special people with right. special anointings. Everybody's got the anointing.
Right.
So then I joined like white churches from mm-hmm. then, like around 14, 15.
Mm-hmm.
But by white, like the leadership is white.
Yeah.
Even if the congregation is like mixed. Yeah. The leadership is white. It's a white culture. It's white people. Mm. And I'm on my Bethel journey. I'm praying for the sick. I'm healing the sick.
Yeah.
I'm
yeah.
giving words of whatever. And I was really like listening to all of these, whatever audios, whatever things I could find. I was like, you know, trying to like, you know, get myself up to speed with everything. Cause I'm like, oh my God, I've missed so much. All of this knowledge that God granted the Americans yeah,
sure.
that I didn't have. So now I need to catch up.
Sure.
And then a guy called, I don't know. I think we're not allowed to say names, but we'll a missionary appears.
Keep it general, I guess. Yeah.
A missionary guy appears and uh-huh. he like kind of like activates this like youth group that we had, and we
the God start Squad.
To do all our ministry. The God Squad.
I think I still have the t-shirt.
Really? Yeah, and so we go around praying for people and yep. Et cetera, led by our wonderful missionary guy.
Yes.
And then I think, I don't know when you guys came, I think 2 years after, a year after?
Yeah, I think so. It was 2011 May when we were there, so.
Yeah, then like more missionaries came.
Including myself.
Yeah, and so we just kind of do the missionary work.
Yeah.
And then the missionaries leave.
Yeah.
And the missionaries stop.
Yeah. Sorry,
somebody's calling. And I was really like, damn.
Yeah.
Like what now?
Yeah.
And I was like, and I think this is the beginning of the end for me. I'm like, why do missionaries always leave? And yeah, this just like was like a question in my heart. But anyway, then I go to this other church, become involved with them, and they're a little bit into like Bethel thing, but they're not going out praying for the sick as much. But I'm like, I'll settle. They are a little bit like in this zone.
Mm-hmm.
Shame, not that I'll settle, but they're kind of doing it, but not to the extent to which I was doing it before.
Right.
And then after matric, after grade 12, I wanted to be a missionary, so I worked for my church as an intern. And like 2 months in, I'm like, in my heart. And I told my friend at the time, this is not it. And she's like, well, you're here, so you're gonna have to push through. And so for the rest of that year, I like kind of pushed through. But I was like, yeah, so this is like when my problems begin.
Mm-hmm.
2 months in, I'm like, I'm not gonna be a missionary. Nobody's there's the church is not gonna send me on some missionary trip. God is not gonna send me on some missionary trip. The kind of missionaries that go on these trips, they don't look like me.
Huh.
No one's sending me to the nations.
Uh-huh.
And it really was like very sobering, because I'm like, it's just business as usual. There's no great call. There's no like the call of my life, you know, like that thing that I had been reading about, that God is going to call me.
Yeah,
and I'm going to be activated.
That's sort of like,
then, like
that moment where there's like a halo above the one thing that you're supposed to do.
Yeah, or like a speaker's going to come and say, you, Yanela, God said that you must go. Nothing
yeah.
like that.
I'm curious to ask, I'm sorry. You can keep going.
Yeah, no, go ahead.
I was just going to ask, like, for some people, they would interpret, okay, if they don't get a word about something they would interpret that as, okay, well, I'm supposed to keep waiting. I'm curious if there was, like, a time where you decided, you know what? I'm not going to wait anymore. I'm going to literally, like, decide I'm going to do something different. Was there, like, a day or an experience that did that for you?
No, I don't think I had, like... So I asked my mom for like a year. I was like, I just want to work for the church for 1 year. That's how I just, because I believed that in that year, if I gave God a year, he would do the thing, you know, he'd come and call me somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And like I said, 2 months in, it was about March of that year. I was like, I was doing church admin, which is fine. You know, like, cause I'm like, you do the work, you know, we have to do the like, boring stuff before you do the exciting stuff.
Right. But it's not what you signed up for.
No, I wanted to be a missionary. And I quickly realized that I was not going to be a missionary. And I remember also at the time, like sometime during the year, they put up their posters in my church for heroes of the faith. And the heroes of the faith were not all of them. Most of them were from the West. And they were all white. I think there was like one woman, like Catherine Coleman or something, was up there. And then I was like, and of course, this is all still like, we're all still like Bethling, we're all still Hillsonging. And,
yeah.
You know, I asked at some point, I was like, are we going to sing like any local songs? Because, you know, we have 11 official languages. And I remember this conversation because my pastor goes like, oh, like what, for example? And I gave an example. I don't know what I said, some song. And then he was like, well, we can like incorporate more like local songs when they say, when they have a bigger message than like whatever that song just said. And I'm like, and I'm 19 and I'm like, and I don't have the guts that I do now. So I'm like,
sure.
Right. Okay. So all of these things, I was kind of like, yeah, it was just like a moment of like, this is not, what I thought it was.
Yeah.
And also like working for the church also kind of exposed me to that like church is an organization,
right,
made of people,
as opposed to this like ethereal magical thing that just like runs itself perfectly by the Lord.
Yeah. And it's presentation, you know. Yeah. Like when I think about working for the church, I think about also like I learned a lot of like business skills. I don't know, not business skills, but like how to run an organization, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It taught me a lot of like leadership skills and, you know, practical skills, which I'm grateful for.
Yes.
But yeah, it is not this like magical thing that I thought it was. So it was kind of like, but more than that, I think, yeah, it was just that moment when I was like, I not that I believe a lie, but what I thought was isn't. And that's sort of like, I'm gonna pause here if you want to like probe the conversation to go a particular way, because I was gonna start to talk about like then I deconstruct, right, like after
sure.
that year,
sure,
basically my disillusionment with the church and
sure
God, like God is not gonna call me. Like,
wow,
I don't have money, I have nobody who's invested in me and sending me somewhere. I have no, you know, like it doesn't happen for people like me. And then of course when I go into university, then there's much bigger questions, like the people who need saving are people who look like me. And then we can never be the saviors of, you know, continents and peoples, you know. Yeah, we're always the ones being saved. That's how it works. In missionarism, I mean, in a lot of things, like even when later, if we have time to talk about decolonization, if you think about.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Because that you, I love what you've talked to me about. In fact, I mean, maybe since we're on to talking about your college experience a little bit, I'd be really curious to hear, I guess, you know, because then I know a little bit about, you know, your story and how you became very passionate about speaking up about decolonization, and especially the Roads Must Fall protests happened while you were there, correct?
Yeah.
Would you mind just like telling folks a little bit about what that was like for you, and maybe a little background to us folks in the United States who have no idea what that is?
Yeah. So in 2014 was my internship year at the church, and 2015 was the Roads Must Fall protest. So
you, Lord. Wow. Wow.
For what you've done for me. It was my first year.
Yeah.
And it just kind of like ignited, I think, something inside of my own heart where I'm like, there is something terribly wrong, you know?
Yeah.
And of course, this is not, they're not talking about the church. They're talking about, so the movement, if I can summarize it, and, you know, it's way more than what I'm going to say, but
sure.
Protesting the colonial legacy in South African universities. And what, you know, some people will be like, you know, we're protesting statues, and I'm like, we are protesting the statues that are here of these imperialists.
Yeah.
But we're also protesting the curriculum that we are being taught, and the denial of access for a lot of Black folk, and the treatment of Black staff. You know, so this is what the protests were about. And so, in this conversation about like decolonization, which means a lot of things. And it's like, you know, when people are like, what does it mean to decolonize? Like every time I go home, someone's like, how can you decolonize like English, for example? How can you decolonize the subject? And I'm like, teach African literature. That's written in English. That's how you decolonize. if you're thinking about the department, or teach different philosophies, you know, teach like things that are not entirely from the West. Like,
yes.
And when you've done that, because that's not even the end.
Yes.
You go even further. You explore other languages. What? How can you? You know what I mean? Like, there's so much to talk about when it comes to decolonization. But I think how I can relate it to the Christian question is, for a lot of us who were coming out from church, also we were Christians, and we were also involved in these protests, and we were thinking about like, what does it mean to decolonize Christianity, and how do we conceptualize a God that was brought in by the colonial project, and they work together sometimes with missionaries, and missionaries also like help educate some, you know, the Black elite, but they also indoctrinated, and whatever, there's a lot to be said. I don't think I could even condense it. And so we're asking and we're interrogating all of these things. And I'm like, yeah, and so for some people, the route that they took was, you know, Jesus is a brown man. Jesus was a socialist. And there's a lot of, and I was in on that too. I was like, yeah, he is a brown man, socialist. You know, let's go for it. Like, you know, trying to make Christianity make sense, you know, because how is it possible that a good God, you know, works hand in hand with colonialists to oppress people? And also, I think for a lot of people, they were also trying to redefine that and to say, a lot of the protesters and a lot of the anti-apartheid movements, a lot of them were, sorry, my brother just came in. He's disturbing me.
It's all right. Just so you folks know, we got the time wrong on this. We thought in Yunella's time zone, this is supposed to start at 9. So I'm sure we threw her off. It's actually now like 10:30 her time. So I apologize. Other things are probably supposed to be going on right now.
Yeah, no, same, it's fine. Yeah, so and also to locate Jesus and God within the Black community, because yeah. People were praying, people were loving, people were,
yes,
you know, I think there's a quote by Steve Biko, he's like, let Christianity not teach you, not only teach you to love your neighbor, or I'm gonna butcher this quote, but also to not let yourself be oppressed. Like that's not edgy, that's not cool, that's not like Jesus, you know, like to let yourself, because Jesus is a protester, he did protest,
yes. Yes.
You know, like and for like honestly, like it would take somebody who really was invested in the project of understanding a decolonial Jesus for you to try and locate God outside of, you know, white Christianity. It's not like, it's not something I could just like say, like, this is what this, like, people come from it with different angles, you know. There's a feminist Jesus, and I believe that, you know.
Yeah,
and
totally.
there's a Jesus who is, yeah. So I think for some people that's what they did. Mm-hmm. What I did was reject Jesus. Mm-hmm. I was like, goodbye. I was like, there's no way this God whom I believe is like full of love and is full of like, would just, also I was like, my questions were like, how is God not creative? How does the biggest source of wonderful worship music come from this one place? Impossible. Mm-hmm. How are all of these like great knowledges, you know, about like, and also like, why are you selling books? Why do we have conferences? Why are you selling everything? Why are you selling, you know, access to better and deeper know this God, like, then only those who can afford will be the, like, they will be the only ones who have access to the special knowledge that God grants people. I'm like, you know, God is elitist, God is racist, God is I want God to raise up somebody from an indigenous tribe from somewhere as his spokesperson. It cannot be super, super loud West, which made me go, maybe it's not God. Maybe it's just that the West is just really, really loud, and that Western Christianity just dominates.
Yeah.
And so does Western forms of knowledge. And so does Western forms of media. And so do West, you know what I mean? And so if we group them like that, it doesn't just become then I can conceptualize a God. Then I'm like, okay, which is what I did. So I was like, first I was like, no, it's like, what kind of God? What kind of a God would be so like uncreative? Also, like, hello, like there's so many other forms of worship and music and like, you know, like just be a creative God. I don't know. And yeah, so sorry, I'm losing myself. So at first I was like, not that kind of God. Then I'm like, it's not God. It's the West. And then I kind of, I don't know what happens. Then I'm like,
just to clarify, you're still in college when you're going through this whole thought process and trying to.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And thank you for reminding me also, because like in this university experience, and we're having a lot of debates, like we're having, you know, debates about, I don't know, I'm in sociology, I'm doing race, class, sex and gender, like, I'm deconstructing how I've been socialized, how we've all been socialized, you know. I think that also like is part of the process of like everything that I know is not natural. Like the Christianity I know didn't just come because Jesus loves us, you know. Somebody brought it and then we practiced it. And also like, this is also why I'm really grateful that I do history, like, to just like,
and you were history undergrad, everything that correct?
Sorry?
You were an undergrad, was in history, correct? I know that's what you're pursuing as a master. Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, history, sociology, and English. And yeah, to think about like, yeah, the things that you do, that you believe you are, are not like just natural states of being that you've been conditioned to be the way that you are. And so that's like where the decolonization meets the Christianity. And then I kind of like bounce and I'm like really, really struggling actually, because I believe,
yes,
but I don't believe, you know, it's like that. And I used to, you know, quote that Bible phrase over and over again, I believe, Lord, help my unbelief, you know,
yes,
all the time.
Totally.
All the time.
Yep. Well, it's, you know, the logic parts of our brain battling with the sort of emotional. I'm not going to talk about it, 'cause this is about you and your story, but certainly they've done studies and found that, like, literally kind of different people can live in the same brain. You know, a person who, if you talk to the left side of their brain, they say they want to be, you know, a stockbroker, and the right side of their brain wants to be like a painter, and it's the same person. So I think that struggle is very relatable, and I certainly know that I dealt, you know, for folks who don't know, I've interviewed now like 18 people who have gone through some sort of experience like this. I haven't, they're not on podcast yet, but Yanela's been one of those people. So now we're, she's number two on our series, but that has been, that cognitive dissonance is just such a common feature when people go through a faith crisis, a deconstruction, or whatever you want to call it. So you're not alone.
Yeah. No, and that's also the encouraging thing. So as I'm battling this crisis of faith, because I was healing the sick,
totally.
And now I'm like I don't know, like I don't believe. And so what was helpful at times, not all the time, were like some of the people that I used to follow a long time ago, these missionaries. One in particular, I don't think he would mind. I don't think he even knows me, so
okay.
I'll mention him because he's like famous. He's all famous, right. And he makes YouTube videos about his deconstruction. There's a guy called Joshua Tongol.
Oh,
I
yes.
really like this guy.
Yes, yes.
He was so raw and honest and like not shouty. I think that's also why I liked him. I'm a shouty person. And I often like people who are not shouty. Like, just tell me what you're feeling and thinking without like shouting it at me. A skill I haven't learned.
So, well, I struggle with like trying to say what I think. So, you know, like good on you. Like I'm taking notes on like how to say what I think better. Yeah. So thank you.
Yeah. Joshua, like, I like watched his deconstruction on YouTube.
Yeah.
Because, you know, every video would be like, We're not the we don't go to church. We are the church. And he's like, we don't have to go to church. We are living you know, when the church was everything. I'm talking to you. This is church right now. Like we would do stuff like that because we were trying so hard to hold on to our faith, and we could like, you know, see it like slipping through our fingers. Eventually he was like, I don't believe. You know, I was like, what? I was like, I don't believe either. Like, you know, and I mean, not because of him, but like, it was like similar experiences. And then there were a lot of, I don't know, there's a guy called like a pastor who like wrote this blog or did this project where he was going to have a year without God. And it was the most anxiety, like inducing thing to read. I'm like, what? How are you going to have a year without God? Like, you know, like, you're not, what? And yes, and some of that was really scary for me because I was like, people I had watched, because Joshua used to be like somebody, he was like a missionary also to the Philippines. And I was inspired partly by that. And then he kind of also has his questions. So I'm inspired by that. And then eventually he's like, no. And I'm like, oh, you know, it's really hard to watch that. And so experience that. But I felt, when I watched him, and there was like it was like communities, like I feel like people, like I feel like this was like, yeah, it was not an like a lone experience. A lot of communities and a lot of people were like, there's something wrong with the way that church is being done. And you know, for some people it's that perspective of like, there's something, it's just the structure, it's the organization, we can fix it, you know. And for me it was much bigger than just the structure, because if it's the structure, I can practice my faith, I could like dump the church and I practice my faith, you know. But it's not even that. It's like in the middle of the night, I'm like, Jesus, why? You know, why are you not able to preach a gospel that makes sense to people who are oppressed? Why, you know, like it's an inconsistent gospel. It's one that like, and how is it possible that like the only missionaries you pick, the only people you call are people from the West? Like, do you not like, you know? Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think I would just be expressing my own like doubts about like what, like, so just to wrap up before, then you can like ask me any questions. after that. A lot of this, then I tried to join some churches in between.
Yeah.
And I remember this one specific moment, like, I was like really like battling, and I was like, God, I'm just looking for the truth. Cause I was still praying. Sure. Like, I wasn't like sure. a believer out, but I was praying. Mm-hmm. I was listening to worship music. I was reading my Bible, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. And whilst I'm like decolonizing or trying to. And so I'm like, God, I'm really looking for truth. And then this girl shows up. She's from this one church I like semi attended. And then I was like, same thing. Mm-hmm. Like, it's the same thing. So she comes up to me and she says, God just, you know, this thing, like, God just told me that you're looking for the truth. And at that point, like, I was also like super unimpressed with like miracles or like words of knowledge. Cause like, I've done that. It's very impressive for somebody who's like out of touch a little bit, like with, or doesn't believe in that kind of thing. Like, but I was like, That's not impressive to me either. God, I said I was looking for truth. Some girl showed up saying you're looking for the truth. Maybe like, I don't even care. Like, if that is really you, this God that I'm speaking to, like, do best, do bigger. Like, it can't just be like a girl walking up to me and being like, and she's a white American girl, bless her heart. Like, you're looking for the truth, and the truth is found in Jesus. And, you know, I think for some people it would have been like a message, like, go back. For me, I was like, I don't feel like my questions are answered, you know, but I also, yeah, maybe I should just also, cause I'm just talking about the experience, but like for myself in the, you know, like in the night or like when I'm sleeping, when I'm talking to God, I felt when I questioned, when I asked, when I cried, when I was doubtful and I was honest, I wasn't just trying to be like, I believe. I felt peace. And so every single time I did that, I was like, there's something more to this than just the black and white of like, I believe and I don't believe.
Wow.
Because I feel like this thing that's driving me to question is possibly God himself. The one God is not afraid of the questions. Or whoever, you know, for some people who completely reject God and
right.
the universe. There's right. something inside of you when you're honest about something that doesn't make sense, you know, rather than pushing through, you know, mm-hmm. and removing the doubts in case, you know, it's the devil or whatever. Mm-hmm. And it's just to be honest. And that's also, I think, when I started to reframe my thinking of God as a God who's inside of me, which is something I think the Bible in some ways, or Christianity in some ways, does teach, like in terms of the Holy Spirit and stuff, he's inside of you and he speaks mm-hmm. to you. But it felt like it was also a little bit me inside of mm-hmm. me, you know, mm-hmm. it's God in me, inside of me, whatever. And it's like the peace that comes when I'm honest that this stuff doesn't make sense and I don't believe anymore. Mm-hmm. And it's this piece that I think I've been trying to follow since then. And when we reconnected, it was like last year, where, you know, if people were following me, they knew I was like back. I was like in the church again. I was like in Christian. I'm like back because I was trying to not lose this connection that I think I'm feeling with God, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm like, sure. I must have to go back to the thing that I know, you know? But even then there were these moments where I'm like, I'm being dishonest. Like, I don't listen to this music anymore. This preacher does not make sense. This preacher does not believe in Black Lives Matter, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. Like, this is not an honest process for me but every time I am honest and every time I'm like, you know, I even spoke to you, I would be like, maybe I'm washing the dishes and then the peace comes.
Yeah.
I didn't have to sing my lungs out for it. I didn't have to do anything to gain it.
Yeah.
It's just a God that is there, you know, that doesn't come and go and doesn't like, I think I do believe that in there you can become more aware. You sure. know, I think that there's practices you can do to become more aware of a God that is already there, or a universe, or a higher self, or, you know, however, but even what I call it doesn't matter. Like for me, yeah. you know, I just want to follow that this peace inside of me and it's like, yeah, it just comes with an honesty of like not trying to deny yourself
right
your questions. And I also like this song by this one famous Bethel singer, or I don't know if she's still Bethel, but whatever, Amanda has something. It's called House on a Hill, and there's this one line there where uh-huh. she's like, ask your questions, I promise you the truth. And I really like that idea of like, God is not afraid of your questions. God is not afraid of your doubt. Like, I want a God who's big enough to understand that I cannot accept a white Jesus. Like, yes. Can he be that radical? Like, at yeah. least, you know?
Yes.
Like, let me at least bring the question to him. And then he can be like, it's not about color, which I don't believe God would ever say. Like, you know, because,
right.
you know, I don't, like, God is not white. God is right. not Western. God doesn't have a Western Christianity. God is not a Western Christian. You know,
yes.
his theology, his intellect, his ideologies are not white Christianity. You know, he's radical enough to conceptualize that I need to understand why he chose the people who dominate society to be the people who continue to represent him. And if I'm like, that doesn't make sense, then and I ask him that, like, I think he's big enough to handle it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so. I think I'm going to stop there because I could keep going. And I just want to be aware that we have like 10 minutes left.
No. That was all really fascinating. And I
threw my sojourner.
I'm like imagining myself like going back and be like, I got to write down all these quotes because there's a lot of gold in there already. But there's a lot still to talk about, like different aspects of your journey. And I really appreciate the talking about that peace that comes, because I've had a very similar experience when you think like that by, you know, acknowledging your deepest like doubts or scary questions or whatever, that you're just like going to get struck by a lightning bolt or whatever. It's just like, actually, I think there is something that just says, you know what, you're like making peace with yourself, with your own brain, with these different parts that clash with each other, seemingly so. And there's this verse, right? Like, then you'll know the truth and the truth will set you free. I have that verse written up on my whiteboard here because I do believe that. And I don't think we can get there without looking at all our different parts. So I really appreciate you saying that. Now, I want to talk a little bit about your understanding. So with the supernatural, for example, I want to circle back about the exchange we had a couple of months ago when I sent you basically a draft of my book, and you read it and you're like, you said very, very kind things about it. I wrote down things you said and I was like, that was great. I'm just like pinning that on my wall. And then I sent you this appendix, which is basically like, all right, here's a lot of science and psychology, and I'm basically going to try to deconstruct all this different like stuff about, you know, the charismatic church. And your response to that made me think a lot. Essentially, and I have a lot of friends now who even, like, I literally got a message today from someone who, see if I can pull it up here, said, I deeply want to believe in faith healing, but I find myself skeptical. I'm curious, on your other side of shipwreck disillusionment, do you still believe in faith healing? Have you witnessed what you would call authentic healings? Or was it all just a sham? Or was it some of it very real? And I thought of you when that question was asked too, because you sort of made me think differently about questions like this, where the border between the natural and supernatural maybe isn't quite what we think. So I was wondering if you could maybe unpack a little bit of that for us.
I will. I just need to, can you give me like 1 second?
Oh, no problem.
I'll be
one. Now for a commercial break, everybody. And I'll tell you more about my next episode of my podcast. Actually, folks who are listening or watching in, I have this book that Yanila recommended for me to read. It's called I Write What I Like by Stephen Biko. And she's actually recommended a lot of other books as well. But this one has been really fascinating to me. For those of you who don't know, Stephen Biko was, I guess it was the 70s, right? Where he was most active, or was it in the 60s? Hello?
I think the 70s, yeah. I don't
okay.
think it was.
Talking about black consciousness and basically apartheid. And I've been really enjoying it so far, getting his perspective. And he actually talks about some of the stuff I just asked you about as well. So I'll let you get back at it.
The late 1960s and 1970s. I don't want to be dragged. I will be dragged for not knowing that. So I just had to Google that. Okay.
Yeah, history major. There you go.
Sorry, what was the question again? Oh.
Essentially drawing the line.
The border between the natural and supernatural. Okay. Right. Why I didn't like your appendix.
She did not. And she was very honest. And I really appreciated the directness.
I think it, for me, I say this quite often to people if they're talking and I'm like, that's not honest. So I would, I don't know. I just have this thing where I'm like, that's an honest thing. Like your book is honest. It's your story.
Right.
Not trying to, make it anything that is, but your appendix, like it felt like it was trying to justify your book. Sure. This is my sense, like, and I say that like I don't believe in faith healing, like I became disillusioned with that, and here is like a psychological or scientific explanation for why it's not true or why faith healings don't exist. Mm-hmm. I don't like that. To me, or like those are two different things. Mm-hmm. Like that's one experience of disillusionment. Mm-hmm. I once believed, I no longer believe, and then there's learning about psychology and how like psychology can work and how science can work and how like, I mean, I don't even, and then I also think that there's a like a reverence for science and unhealthy. I say that, but then America is not like, they also have a very unhealthy non-reverence for science.
It depends on who you talk to.
An unhealthy reverence. I have to be careful. I think there's a sense in which people like they believe that science is pure, like it has no, and this is something that we do with history as well, because people believe history to be like, but obviously people know like history is like it's written by the winners,
right?
You know, but it's written, and so and every person who writes, whether people are writing back or writing in or writing, I'm writing in Black people into history, I'm writing women into history. It's all really like. It's all a little bit a construction of a story, and we're trying to get to the bigger story. Yeah. And I think people are becoming more aware of that within the history discipline, because sometimes it's like it's an art and it's like a science.
Yeah.
You know, that's why I kind of
I
appreciate it. It can't take either. It cannot be. It's not just literature, although you know Marco Polo was writing. Literature. And what's a Marco Polo? And it's not just a science, because people are writing and people are not without prejudice, bias. But the same applies to science. I think I did something called the sociology of science, and this is where I don't remember everything. You know, maybe I need to get the
Okay, you just
out.
Give us like a sort of sense of what you studied then, and then maybe point to resources.
So I hope I say this correctly. I hope no PhD person or lecturer is like, you're talking garbage. But my understanding was that, and I think this is something we also do in history, like it's not just a set of, it's not just statistics that are put there.
Right.
And placed within categories.
Right.
It's not just a study done on a particular group of people. Mm-hmm. It's a certain person, a certain political party, a certain pharmaceutical company, a certain wellness company conducting a study to prove, like I'm laughing, like to prove whatever it is they need to prove. And so I think if you think of science as a pure thing, that's like untainted by people's biases, their motivations, their agendas, it's a dream, it's a belief. That's why I call it belief. Sometimes, like when I say that to people, I'm like, you believe in science, like you, and by belief, it's just that you have some blinders, I think, when you come to it. Like, and I think if you can think about like all of these other factors that influence the kind of science that exists,
right?
Not to be like a conspiracy theorist, you know, because I think that science is valuable and trustworthy, and But science was also used to justify racism. Like, there was a time when that was science, right? Mm. Like, there was a time when eugenics was a thing. And, you know, it's a lot of people sometimes will go like, but that was such a long time ago. And I'm like, obviously we know that there's racism, but that was the science, you know, there's a lot of things that happen within the scientific community, and there's a lot of projects and a lot of studies and a lot of things that are done by people with different motivations. And I think that affects the kind of results that you have. It's not just, you know, yeah, like, and so that's why I think when it comes to your appendix, I'm like, You don't need to back yourself up with a psychologist that said a thing about how faith healings happen, because unless you read a book and you weren't like,
right, have it affect my journey.
Like, yeah, and then you encounter something rather than, I think, looking. I mean, I think that's okay too if you want to like look for something to try and make sense of what you experienced.
Yes.
But I think I think that comes in, like, that's a big conversation. It's not just to say, like, that wasn't a real thing. This is the real thing.
And I think I'm sorry, go for it.
Yeah, so I was going to say, like, I think what I think is, like, it stands out even more, like, for me, like, in a place of, like South Africa, or at least, like, for Black people, is that, like, there is this, I feel like there is already a kind of mistrust. Of like, you know, when they talk in the US about like the Black community that distrusts the medical community with very good reason, right? Yeah. And so I think there is a mistrust of everything that presents itself as, I am logical, I am rational. I am not because we do not like those things, but because they were used in very particular ways to oppress people.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, they were, so they came from the colonizers, essentially, in the same way that the missionaries brought, you know, Christianity to you. They also were the ones who introduced this idea of like rationality and logic, but at the same time were oppressing you, Black communities in Africa.
Right. And also it's not rational and it's not logical, right?
Because
I think people like are like, well, you just did it in a wrong way, but what we brought was truth. No, like, it is not rational to do that. It is not logical to do that.
Yes.
And the people that you are coming into are not necessarily without a God, without a religion, without a science, and without a rational, without a logic. It may not be your logic or your rational or your spirituality or your God. And perhaps we are lacking in your God. Like, what we don't have is your God, right? But these communities, people, human beings are capable of knowledge and, you know, and whatever, rational and logic. And so I think that's, for me, that's why I was like, I can already, like, I don't have to go to science to back me up, because science was never going to back me up, for example. You know, like, I don't need like psychology. And this was for me though. Some people do. Some people need Black theology for Jesus to make sense for them. Some people need a feminist theology for Jesus to make sense. For them, I did not want whatever I decided on. I wanted for it to be, to come from inside of me. Not that I don't learn from everybody else, or I can't learn from like leaders or people who've walked the journey before me. But I feel like I'm losing my mind.
No, not at all. I found a quote from. I'm sorry, what?
No, I'm just saying I'm stressed.
Oh, no, you're doing great. And I, you know, I'm probably only going to ask you questions for maybe 5-10 more minutes. And then if anyone else who's listening and wants to ask a question, they can just type that in at some points and we can get to it. Because, I don't want to, you know, obviously we could talk forever and we have conversed back and forth, but we want to have this sort of be a route to other conversations later, hopefully. Stephen Biko talks about in his book about this sort of idea of like, the Western sort of aggressive mentality of, basically seeing a problem and immediately trying to formulate a solution to it. And like, basically, I'm actually looking at a quote here. It's like, he cannot live with contradictory ideas in his mind. He must settle for one or the other, or else involve a third idea in his mind, which harmonizes or reconciles the other two. He is vigorously scientific in rejecting solutions for which there is no basis in logic. He draws a sharp line between the natural and supernatural, the rational and non-rational, and more often than not, he dismisses the supernatural and non-rational as superstition. Africans, being a prehistoric people, do not recognize any conceptual cleavage between the natural and supernatural. They experience a situation rather than face a problem. By this, I mean they allow both rational and non-rational elements to make an impact on them, and any action they may take could be described more as a response of the total personality to the situation than the result of some mental exercise. I'm curious if you have thoughts on that.
I do have thoughts. One, sure. Like, yes, it can be a yes. And two, a little bit problematic. But I think for his purposes, what he said was important, mm-hmm. right? Like that there's like, for certain people, like the West or white people at the time, not all white people, whatever. There's this, if it's not Jesus, then it means that it was science all along, or whatever, or this.
Right.
Because also they are like, it's not the science. I mean, okay. Anyway, so like for some people, it has to be sure. This or that, or like if it's, I've been believing my whole life, like I've been, then it must be the extreme other. And like, mm-hmm. so I agree with him there. I think my only problem is when, in fact, I just don't even like to call rational and logic like belonging to a people, because that has been the basis of a lot of racism.
Yeah.
To say that the Africans, they are a feeling people.
Right.
It even comes through like when you talk about dance, actually. But this other philosopher talks about this, like when we say that, like when you overemphasize like how, you know, Africans or indigenous people, like they feel more than they think. Mm. And the Western people are thinkers, you know. So that's the only uncomfortable thing that I feel about that paragraph is that I think he could say the same thing without making it like they're like so caught up in like he, if for example, if you say they're so caught up in their minds. Like they're like the mind, their minds are like going crazy, you know, which is like not healthy, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But to say like one is thinking, the other one is not as thinking, you know, I think then the question can go further to be like a question of like, yeah, like rational, logic, intellect. This one can think, this one cannot.
Yeah.
This one feels more than you think. This one is more intuitive, like, you know, like.
Yeah.
And that kind of thing, which has very racist connotations and is the basis for why like. The West will say like, well, we are a thinking people, therefore.
It's very clear that we have demonstrated in the West that we are very capable of not thinking. So I'm curious to sort of relate this conversation about, I guess, like, you know, dealing with a tension between two maybe seemingly contradictory or different ideas. I'm curious, like, if that's a part of how you view your spiritual life today and like really in practical ways, like, how does that manifest for you? Or you have real clear, like, okay, this is what I am and this is what I'm about. And I don't know. I'm just curious to hear how you describe what your spiritual life is like these days.
So I think I've really embraced that we could be having a similar experience, that some of the experiences that I had within Christianity, I can have outside of Christianity. I can have peace outside of a soaking room, like, you know, crazy, but I can do it and it's amazing.
Yes.
And that for me has been like kind of like the, it didn't have to be that specific avenue, the Christian avenue, for it to be real. Like it didn't have to be a faith healing for it to be healing, because there were healers all around the world. There were healers across the world. They were not just in the charismatic church, right?
Yeah.
But that was my avenue, and that's how I experienced it. And I came out of a place that didn't do that before, and all of a sudden, the only healings I'm seeing are faith healings from a Christian community. Therefore, that's where peace is, that's where love is, that's where healing is.
Yeah.
And I think when you start to see that there's a world outside of yourself, your community, your society, that can have a similar experience, and they're using, then I think you can try and think of it as like practicing the principles of what, like, you know, still this, like, you can practice stillness, for example. Like I practiced stillness, like when I was praying, and I wouldn't call it stillness. I would pray and I would sit and I would wait on God.
Yeah.
You know, like, or whatever, clear your mind. Like, so right now, like I do like meditation and stuff, and that has been really, really helpful for me. And it's been really practical for me, because I think now when I sit and like, I have a thought and I'm like, that's a thought. And it's not, you know, it even conquered for me the question of like, is it my mind or is it God? Is it me or is it God? Because the chatter, I'm like, that's just thought. Is it my, you know, and so now I feel like when I started to do this practice of like trying to be still, there is something else outside of the chatter, you know, of my mind. And so, or maybe it's just like, maybe how you would frame it is this other part of your mind, or I don't know. And
I try not to ask questions that I can't really ever answer.
So however you conceptualize it, I think it's not the biggest issue, unless it's harmful, I think, like unless it harms you.
Yeah.
But I think you should continue the practice, because like I was saying, like sometimes the trouble with deconstruction is that if you just try and pull yourself out of something, all of a sudden you're anxious, you're depressed, because there were practices that you did within Christianity that helped you live, you know, live happy, live joyful, live peaceful.
Yeah.
All of a sudden you're angry all the time. Like, you don't know why, like, because maybe you stop praying, you know?
Yeah.
Like, pray, it's okay. Like,
yes.
And maybe it's not, and that practice can change. Maybe it will become meditation. Maybe it'll become whatever it is. So I think trying to balance out, like, I don't need to know that. I'm not somebody who needs to know. Like, also, like, I've abandoned the project of trying to make Christianity make sense for me. Like, like I said, there are people who like go the black theology route and they're really invested in trying to. I'm like, for me, that is so much work. One.
It's so funny, because when we talked six months ago, I feel like that was more the route you were on.
It was.
That's so interesting to hear. I mean, it's just fascinating. Yeah, it's like, I hear from a lot of people who walk this journey is they're like, you know what? Like, my mind could change. And actually, like, you know, that's not even the point anymore to like end up at a place. It's like, it's a journey. So it sounds like you resonate with that because you're nodding your head, but maybe you want to speak to that.
Yeah, I agree with you. Like, I was even thinking, like, the last time I spoke to you, I was trying to immerse myself in the church and trying to listen to black women teachers and trying to do all of these things to make it make sense. And then I had a conversation with you, and then the old questions came up.
No.
I was like, yeah.
Now I feel bad. Because now, I go to church.
I'm so grateful.
Yeah, I mean,
sorry,
go for it.
Oh, so I was gonna say, like I said, I sent this voice note. I was like, I think it's always like this question, it's not a question, but like this journey, like one that you're not just walking forward to get to the eventual destination, but you sometimes circle back to once what you thought you knew, but you didn't quite know, or what you believe. It's like coming into yourself and like emptying yourself and like relearning and unlearning, and for some people it's uncomfortable. They're like, I just kind of want to feel comfortable. And I'm like, if you're not constantly debating with yourself, like if I said to myself March last year, it was wrong for me to believe that God gave me this house, for example. Like, I don't believe that. I don't think it was wrong for me to believe that.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that was the case.
Mm-hmm.
You know, at the time, now maybe I think I conceptualize it as me putting out positive energy into the world and like co-creating with God or whatever, because I still believe in God and whatever the name, you know, I don't mind his name or her name or its name.
Yeah.
Their name. But yeah, it's like whatever this thing is inside of me that I feel like it's the one, like it's like, it's, she's the one that's like, that's kind of helping you in this process to deconstruct. Like I said to you one time, I was like, I think Jesus brought me to this place. Like, I think Jesus was the one, like ask why I'm white, ask why they're portraying me as a white man.
Mm-hmm.
And then ask why, you know, like, to even like within myself to kind of purged my own prejudice, my own, like, you know, the things about God that I believe that God is like, that's not me, like, and that's not the only way, and that's like, that's a way, like when you sing that song, that's a way to feel connected, but that's not the only way, and that's not necessarily because maybe because of the energy you're putting into it, or the energy the person who wrote the song put into it, You know, they were deeply connected to something, and now you're listening to it, and now you're feeling that.
Yeah.
Sorry, I feel like if they're non-believers here, I have a friend who's like an atheist, and sometimes it's just like, I don't know what you're talking about. Like,
I think probably more so people who identify as Christians are watching this as of now. I think one of the reasons why I felt this project was important now is just because of basically, you know, with the disillusionment that's happening, is sort of church politics, those sort of conversations lately. I felt, you know, with a lot of people like wondering, okay, like how do I create my own faith or version of that? In the midst of this, where we have these sort of contradictions that are happening in leadership and, you know, prophecies that went wrong and things like that. So, but, you know, it's fascinating, you know, seeing you, because you kind of went through this, a version of this, I guess, 5 years ago or so. To see where that journey takes you. So I hopefully folks who are experiencing that right now will recognize that, you know, it is still a journey, and it's fine. You know, you got questions still, and some of them won't seem as important in the future. Others will become more important, but we just do it together. You know, that's kind of the thing. So, I will, if anyone has any questions, feel free to just post them now. I will just sort of do a wrap up general question and ask, like, if there's anything that you wish we had talked about, but we didn't get to talk about, you, feel free to talk about it now.
Talk now. No, actually, it's this thing that you asked me. I don't know if you asked it, and I like kind of didn't answer. And, like,
oh gosh, my own, like, I probably went way off the notes. I apologize. Say, like, what?
No, me too. I don't know. I just talk, but it's okay. I feel like, I wanted to, if somebody like is going through like a faith crisis,
yeah,
and they're, I don't know if I answered that, but my encouragement would be, is to embrace where you're at. And to also trust where you're at, and that the things you have learned and the things that have brought you to this place are not like by accident, if you believe, you know, but and if you can't trust yourself and this voice within, trust the God that you believe in. Trust that he is faithful enough to see you through this, and is faithful enough to provide you the answer that you're looking for. And like, really, if you, like he said, if you seek, you will find. And I really believe that. And I think not denying yourself what you feel, what you're experiencing, the doubts that you feel. You know, there's even a scripture I posted on Instagram once, this like long speech when I was praying to God for people who doubt. There's a scripture I was like, I feel like it's never preached. It's like, it says, be merciful to those who doubt. What? I was like, how is this never ever preached ever? I really stumbled upon that. Like, be merciful to people who doubt, because maybe somehow, somewhere, they knew that we would doubt. So, like, maybe the folks were doubting. The Christians were like, you know, and to show mercy. And I think if we're encouraged to do that for each other, like, one, that we should have mercy, you know, for each other, and like show grace for each other and support each other and collaborate with each other and chat through these things and be honest. Then, and also like the God we believe in, it's also incredibly merciful, you know, I mean, if you believe in that kind of God.
Yeah.
If you believe in another kind of God, then perhaps he's not so merciful. But I believe if there is a God, he's merciful.
Yeah.
And he's full of grace. And to see it through that dark night.
Yeah.
And peace comes in the morning.
Amen.
And it's not always clear. But I think that radical trust is also another thing. There's like, whether it's in yourself or it's in God, but a trust that, like, one, if you're seeking the truth, that you will find it, or it will find you. And that, yeah, that you're co-creating, you're not alone.
Yeah. Wow. Well, now I don't think we could end on a better note than that, really. So I'm kind of glad that no one pitched a question in, although I just saw Stephen Winter liked it. I don't know if you ever met him, but he was someone who was involved during our ministry days 10 years ago, and I haven't talked to him in forever. So thanks, Stephen, if you're listening in. Good to hear from you with your thumb. And sort of to wrap up, is there anything that you would like to send people to who are listening to the podcast, like any projects you're working on, or just like your Instagram handle? let us know.
You can follow me. I'm joking.
Oh yeah, sure. I think people should follow you.
I mean, you can follow me on Instagram. Okay. I'm ranting a lot less now because like I just have less 3 a.m. anxieties. Like,
yeah,
because
sure.
I just don't experience anxiety like that. I have a lot more peace.
Wow.
Like,
yeah.
But there will come a time probably when I will write again.
Sure, sure.
You can follow me at Namatapata.
We'll spell it out for us for Westerners who don't know how to. Yeah. Excellent.
And yeah, like I'm trying to write my master's. So when I write that, it's about decolonizing the history curriculum in South African universities. I will link that somewhere.
Yes, we'll maybe connect afterwards because that sounds fascinating and really that deserves its own whole podcast episode. But we'll wrap this one up for now. Thank you so much for being willing to put yourself out here with, you know, a bunch of us folks up yonder because I love how we've been able to connect over the past year and find some sort of similarities in the experience. And I'm very appreciative that you're willing to reach out to us because it wasn't even me who reached out to Yanela. You reached out to me, I guess, a year ago, basically being like, how are you doing?
Oh my God, you're exposing me. I didn't even reach out to her. She reached out to me like.
Well, no, because talking about like the idea of missions trips and all that. I mean, it's again, yeah, we were going to talk about that more, but I want to try to keep that short enough. But, you know, I'm very grateful because I think. It'd be very well deserved if, you know, you were mad enough for us to show up and then leave and never come back to just be like, I don't want to talk to you guys ever again. So I appreciate that you're willing to be like, no, let's actually like find out how they're doing. I'm very flattered. And so I hope that your story gets
out there. Initial feelings were like,
yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
then I was like, do you guys still believe? Can you just tell me where you're at? Like,
yeah, that's right. That is how that conversation started. Which of course, yeah, there's no easy way to answer that. So, yeah, but I'm looking forward to staying connected and, folks, I hope you all go and follow Yanela and, cheer her on as she, works on, decolonizing education in South Africa. So we're going to end the live broadcast now. Take care, everybody. And I'll be on for something new and exciting in 2 weeks. Take care. Thanks, everyone.
Here's to the souls with the stories untold. May the wind fill their sails and carry them home.
Thank you so much for listening to Sojourner Stories Episode 2. If you would like to learn a little more about the audiobook musical that I'm creating, you can head to nathanlandisfunk.com and sign up for my newsletter. Thanks once again, and have a lovely week.